Good morning and welcome to Neocony View. I'm Peter Newman. The Lower Nehalem Community Trust has been around for a few years now, well, over 10. And since today is Memorial Day, I must tell all of our KMU and KTCB listeners that I think the first time I heard about the Community Trust was about 11 years ago, when I was visiting the area, not living here at the time, and I heard on our radio station an interview about the Trust. So that is by way of saying, those of you who are visiting with us this weekend here in Clatsop or Tillamook County, we are going to introduce you to the Lower Nehalem Community Trust, which is an absolutely wonderful thing, and I hope that those of you who have not heard of it before will become as captivated as I am. Our guests, Karen Matthews and Lorraine Ortiz, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Well, let's start there. A listener who's just visiting our area on a Monday morning, tell us, what is the Lower Nehalem Community Trust?
Well, if your visitor's driving down Highway 101 and they get to Oswald West State Park, I think we would just want to remind people that Governor Oswald West was our 14th governor here in Oregon, and he sort of founded the land conservation movement by coming up with the public access for all on Oregon's beaches. And since that time, land conservation has been a big movement in the United States. Right here in our Nehalem Valley, we have the Lower Nehalem Community Trust that was started by a group of seven visionary, committed citizens who saw a dairy farm that was for sale, 54-acre dairy farm. And it lives right on the estuary, and they had this vision that it would become the first property of a local land conservation organization. So it was a new concept for this community, and people came together, rallied around, the property was purchased, and now fast forward 12 years later, and we have a thriving nonprofit that we're going to talk to you about today.
Well, land goes on the market all the time. What was attractive about this piece?
The fact that it's on the estuary. Estuarine land is some of the most critical habitat because the edge lands provide healthy water. They protect us against rising sea levels for climate change. They provide salmon run habitat. And they are the corridors for a lot of the species that live in our areas. And they are also the most desirable to human beings to build houses on. So to be able to preserve those lands offers great stability for the community's health and vitality for everybody that lives here.
You said fast forward 12 years, but boy, if you look at it now 12 years later, there's a lot that happened in that 12 years.
Oh, it's remarkable what a committed group of citizens can do.
And it's not only the 54 acres, but it's also additional properties, and we're now up to 104 acres, multiple properties throughout the area that are also conserved in perpetuity. So it is a great addition to both the residents as well as our visitors and the wildlife that benefits from that.
It's interesting you talk about conservation, because conservation to many is, well, just leave the land alone, remove the human part of it. But this is a farm, which is not untouched land.
Well, Karen made the distinction that this trust actually owns seven different parcels. And the one I was talking about, referring to, was the first piece that the trust owned. And it's a 54-acre dairy farm, and former dairy farm. And 5 acres of that was pulled out for public use. And that's what Karen's going to talk to you about today. She's the manager and coordinator of what we call our community garden. And that's where we can come and do demonstration projects. Karen's going to tell you all about
it. Really Karen, it's really exciting, because it seems to me with industrial agriculture, we've come a long way from what you would like to see a farm be all about.
Yeah, we have a great group of volunteers who participate in our program each week, and we have a community garden, as Lorraine mentioned. There's 5 acres. About 1.2 acres is in cultivation, and then we also have a barn and a very large greenhouse. We utilize that more as an educational program, although we're very productive. We produce food for our garden volunteers and their families, as well as the local food bank. We donate over a ton of food every year. Last year, I think it was 2487. I think that's the amount of pounds. So it's all very fresh and organically grown.
What grows well here?
Well, lots of leafy greens, all the cool season crops. We do continue to test and grow some of the warmer season crops like tomatoes and peppers, but you learn the tricks of the trade, and what you really learn is not to fight with the crops, but to learn which of those varieties will do well. And we can pass that information on not only to our garden program members, but also the community at large when we grow seedlings for our plant sale. So
yeah, I imagine the point is not just to make 5 acres very productive and good, but so that people can go home and practice what they do on their own yard.
Yep, that's correct. And we, in addition to our regular program where we have weekly participation, we hold workshops periodically. We just finished a series of 2 workshops titled Vegetable Gardening 101. And it was really a basic multi-generational gardening workshop to help families who had very little or no gardening experience in the past learn about their soil, how to prepare for a garden, and how to be successful, starting with some really basic principles.
So if you go to the website, www.nehalemtrust.org, there's a seemingly once or twice a week, 10 o'clock in the morning, there's stuff happening. Is that the stuff?
Yeah, well, we have our gardening session occurs on Tuesday mornings from 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
We need to update our calendar.
Either I'm wrong about that or you can change the website.
I think our website might need adjusted. We do start early in the shoulder seasons at 10 because people don't like to get up quite that early and get on with the gardening. But through most of the season, it is a 9 o'clock start on Tuesday morning. We start our session with what I call a 10-minute university, adopted from a master gardener term. And it's usually a little longer than that, but about a short 15-minute lesson that is seasonally appropriate. Last week, we had sunshine here on the Oregon coast. It was actually quite warm. And so I talked to people about garden safety and protecting themselves, wearing sunscreen, hats, gloves, keeping their skin covered, and staying hydrated. So that would be a seasonally appropriate. In the fall, we may have a lesson on planting garlic and how to prepare your garlic bed. And then use of tools, proper weeding techniques, and we all learn from each other.
Our guests this morning on Neocony View, Karen Matthews and Lorraine Ortiz, with the Lower Nehalem Community Trust. And I imagine one of the things you might talk to people about is what not to do in a garden, like pesticides and that sort of thing.
Yes, we do use all organic practices. One of my mantras is that if you feed your soil will feed you. So learning about healthy soil, how to make sure that you don't disrupt the natural processes, and that when you do have an imbalance, say, of a certain pest, that you find as natural a way to get around that. We had a problem with weevils in our peas this year, and they will attack the new plants as the seeds emerge. So to get around that, so that we could still have a pea crop, we started some of our seedlings in the greenhouse and brought them out when they were large enough that a little bit of weevil damage would not decimate the crop. So the weevils live, the peas live, we eat peas, we're all happy.
Yeah, I imagine there's a tendency to take what appears to be an easier route, and that easier route is just go spray something, and that's maybe a short-run solution, but it's really not a solution.
It is very short-sighted. In the long run, balance with nature is really one of the keys to good stewardship of the land and making sure that we have a good, clean food source. You mentioned earlier the commercial agricultural practices. Frankly, that concerns me, eating some of that food. So I do, we have a mandate to garden organically there at the Trust. And I do talk to people about the health and safety of their food. And it's very rewarding to be able to give that very healthy food to the food bank. We harvest Tuesday mornings, which is why we have Tuesday on our calendar. We also have a garden session on Saturdays for those who are still working or can't make a Tuesday for another commitment. And so we have Tuesdays and Saturdays, but our Tuesday is specifically set because it is right before the food bank distribution. So we harvest, I take the food bank donation to the food bank in Wheeler right around noon, and at 1 o'clock they start distributing. So people who are less fortunate in our community are able to get very, very nutritious and extremely fresh organically grown food.
How did you get involved? It's one thing to be a gardener and to love to be with the soil. It's another thing to you've taken another step, which is what you've done. How did you get into it?
Well, I was very fortunate to be able to retire early, and I had gardened in the metro area in North Plains. In my working world, I came to the coast to live full-time. We'd had a vacation place here, but I came full-time, and the first thing I wanted to do was meet like people who had a similar interest. So I went and took the Master Gardener training. And when you take that Oregon State University training, it's subsidized by the university and the county, and one of your commitments is to pay back to the community through volunteer service hours. My service project, I had two. I had one, a garden that I worked on with the community kids up at Cardam, and then this opportunity came up with a trust that they were looking for someone to help get a community garden started. So I think I had 60-hour requirement commitment per year, and it's obviously gone much higher than that.
I think you put in more than your 60 hours.
Yeah, I think so. But I love it. What I really like is the camaraderie. We are not a traditional community garden in that everyone gets their own plot assigned. Because education is our focus, we garden collectively, communally, and we all learn from each other. So learning is a passion of mine for gardening, and then getting to know so many great people and a real variety of people. Some people have never gardened before and others who are lifelong gardeners. So I learn from them too, not only about gardening.
Lorraine, I'll ask the same question of you. How did this get on your radar screen, which is a rather big one because you do a lot around in the North Tillamook County community?
Well, way back in the day when I moved here, I started the kayak shop in Wheeler, and I was regularly taking people out into the estuary, and I quickly fell in love with the estuary. So when a group was born that was going to help protect and preserve this place that I loved, I knew that I wanted to be involved, and that occurred. 7 years ago, I got deeply involved with this organization.
One thing I think it's magic about the property is that it's not directly on 101. It's off of it. So, you know, you have to go a little distance off, and it's protected. It's off in a way that allows you to not have business that might be on a highway encroach upon it.
It is. And Peter, the property that you're talking about, Alder Creek Farm, is where the community garden that Karen's talking about does reside. It's one of the seven properties, but the one you're talking about is the first one that was purchased. It's sort of the heart of this organization. It is open dawn to dusk. This property is on the Pacific Coast Birding Trail. It's one of the stops on their map. There's over 83 species of birds that have been sighted there throughout the year. And if you go there early in the morning, you're likely to see the birds and the elk.
The elk are wonderful.
And if you go there at dusk, same thing. It's quiet. It's beautiful. There's a picnic table that is sited where you could have the most magical, romantic dinner you've ever had in your life, looking at birds, elk, right in front of you, nobody around. It's amazing. And yes, it's kind of hidden. We're not trying to hide it, but it's between Manzanita and Nehalem. This particular property is between Manzanita and Nehalem off of Underhill Lane. So look for Underhill Lane.
And you're welcome to visit, again, dawn to dusk.
Dawn to dusk.
What are some of the other properties specifically?
Well, we've tried to, like I said, the focus of this organization has been to conserve this estuarine edge land. So we've purchased the contiguous properties that attach to this one. And they all have their own names. There's Cedar Creek. There is Sitka Spruce.
Vosper Creek,
which is in Wheeler.
Zimmerman Marsh,
Peregrine Point. They all have these wonderful poetic names. And many of them are contiguous on the north edge of the estuary and then estuarine frontage in Wheeler, flanking the north side of Wheeler and the south side of Wheeler, and then one of the properties is up contiguous to Oswald West State Park.
That's one thing I would recommend for people visiting or even who live here is to get a boat or a kayak and go out on Nehalem down the river, the lower part of the river. It's just It's spectacular.
We are one of the least developed estuaries on the Oregon coast, which makes it another reason to really pay attention to it and preserve it while we can. It brings the vitality to our community that our visitors, many who are probably here today visiting maybe for the first time, you can kind of feel the potency of the vitality here. It's what attracts people here. So we're trying to maintain that for those of us who live here now and love it, and then in perpetuity.
A lot of our visitors are very tied in with the environment, and so a lot of ecotourism, outdoor sports, recreation, kayaking, hiking, biking, you know, those sorts of sports that really make this a beautiful place to visit.
When you purchase a piece of land, either the original piece or the subsequent pieces, what do you have to take out? What needs to be removed to make it more like the way you want it to be?
Well, it depends on the parcel. I mean, sometimes there's a structure there that is either not safe or pretty much not safe. So that has to come down. Anything that is toxic, we try to get off of there. One parcel had something like, I don't know, 200 tires or something that had to be removed. So you want to get all that stuff out. And then there's every parcel gets a management plan developed for it. And on a lot of these parcels, there are invasive species, so you try to get those removed. But it's not like those things all don't happen really quickly. It's a process, because with many parcels to steward, you know, you only have so much time and money to do these things. So you really have to pace yourself, plan. And we have a new wonderful stewardship coordinator, Max Broderick, who is helping us a lot with management plan and helping to schedule volunteers. Takes an army to do this work, so the trust has lots and lots of volunteers that help.
Yeah, that invasive species element is one of the things that's common to all of the properties that we've had to deal with over a long period of time, and it is a process. As we do that removal, then native species are either replanted in there by us or by nature, which restores that land. And that is the overarching objective, is to put it back to its natural use in space. As an example, one of the properties in Wheeler had a fish weir on it, and there was a fish farm, if you will, and that was removed. So the stream is now flowing naturally, and we have beavers that have returned to the area. So that's really exciting and fun to watch. And then the larger parcel, Alder Creek Farm, had been diked, and the pasture land was made cow-friendly, if you will. That has now all been returned to a more natural state, or we're in the process of it still. I think it's an ongoing process, but there's now a pond, so we have lots of wildlife, waterfowl wildlife that comes in. So.
No, not all invasive species, or, you know, there was a practical reason for some of it at the time, but a lot of the practices of the past, you go, what were they thinking, right? I mean, do you just walk around when you see a piece of land or something? I mean, for example, to see a whole bunch of tires on a property, and what other than just sheer laziness, what are a bunch of tires doing?
Well, the tires on the one parcel I'm thinking of, the person who had lived there wanted a way to get through the wetland to get to the bay so they could get into the bay and play. So this was their path. You know, and tires were available, so they decided to make their path out of tires.
So that was their dike.
I would still say, what were they thinking?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We all learn, though. I mean, that is part of the process.
Well, that is, and that's what you're doing, is learning what we now believe to be best practices, which will probably change in the future.
Exactly.
Most likely.
Exactly. Just like nature evolves, we're evolving, too, slowly.
Lorraine, I want to talk to you about an event coming up June 7th, the Living Locally, which is, well, for one thing, way fun.
It's way fun. And to tie into what Karen's talking about, Karen and her program are about teaching people how to grow local food. And our event on June 7th, Living Locally, is all about living locally, meaning local food, local experiences, local folks who support these kind of local causes, which make this local place an amazing place to live. This is our 7th annual event. It is our number one fundraiser of the year. We call it a gala, but it's multidimensional. So not only is it a fundraiser, which means we have an amazing auction, which I'll talk about. But the focus is on local food. It's a locavore event. And every year we have a local chef who prepares the meal. This year it's going to be Chef Tom Flood Jr. from the Schooner in Neatarts Bay. And if your listeners haven't been there yet, it's a fantastic restaurant that locally sources 90% of their food, and that's what they're all about. And so they're coming in to cater our event this year. And the purveyors are all coming from Tillamook County, which is very exciting. Everything from salmon to goat cheese to strawberries to the greens to the breads that are being baked, everything is coming from this county, which people know is a 74-mile long county. So it fits in the locavore definition, which is in a radius of 100 miles, but ours will be much more local to that. So that's a big piece of it, is this locavore meal. Another thing that we are premiering at this event, which we're very excited about, we talked about the land trust being 12 years old. And as organizations develop and evolve, they start to really grow roots in their community. And this year we're premiering an award. And this is being named after two of the founders of the trust, Georgine and Gareth Ferdun. It's calling the Ferdun Conservation Award. And it's in honor of their very steady, committed, and visionary work on behalf of this organization. They're just unfailing in their commitment. And they have just retired from the board after serving many, many years, successive years. And this award will be given for the first time to someone on the Oregon coast who's played a role in helping to preserve habitat right here in our watershed. And this year, the award is being given to someone who's kind of an icon in this field, Neil Main. And he founded the North Coast Land Conservancy, a sister organization up in Seaside, Oregon. So it's going to be kind of a tearjerker evening on many, many levels that Neil will be honored that evening. And the Ferduns also will be continually honored by the giving of this award. In years to come, it's going to be an award given by a nomination. But this year for the inaugural award, the board decided that Neil was the first person to receive this. So we're really looking forward to that being the main focus of the event presentation. Then, of course, it is a fundraiser, so we have our live auction, which I kind of want to talk to people about, because if you haven't attended and you haven't been to this particular auction, what it offers are experiences. And these are not off-the-shelf experiences. These are local experiences that you couldn't get any other way than if you came to this event and were able to bid on these. Let me talk a little bit about them. One that we're really looking forward to, and this is a brand new one, this is a guided excursion to Mystery Peak. And Mystery Peak resides in the Coast Range, which we all are referring to these days as the Nehalem Alps. So there's a group that's going to caravan you by car in 7 miles and then walk you to a summit of Mystery Peak. You can't get there any other way, because this group that's going to take you in has the keys to the gates, and they have the map to this place that you could never find on your own. And then you get all this wonderful food and wine and all that stuff. But the fact that you'll be up there looking down in this valley in a new perspective is priceless. So that's a great one. We've got some super kayaks that have been donated. And what's exciting about this, you'll not only get all the kayaks and the gear, but one of our own, Chelsea Nielsen, who has just graduated from OSU, is going to be the guide. And she grew up right on the Nehalem Estuary at the Wheeler Marina. And she went on to be a guide at Alder Creek, not Alder Creek Farm, but Alder Creek Kayak in Portland. And she's kayaked all over the coast.
All over the world, actually.
She is an amazing young woman. And she's going to be your guide if you're lucky enough to get that one. We've got a geologic odyssey for 10, which is going to be led by one of our premier geologists in the area, Tom Horning. We've got the much sought after bar pilot adventure for two up on the Columbia River, where you actually get to go out with a bar pilot and be on the ship, given a tour, go out to lunch with Captain Thron Riggs, who just being with him is an experience. We've got crab cruises, history walks that are not only a local walk with a local historian, but then you get a historically correct dinner after the walk. I could go on and on, Peter.
It sounds wonderful.
But let me also say that if you can't attend the dinner, there's another way that you can have one of these experiences. We have a second way that we earn some funds for the organization. It's called the Golden Ticket Raffle. And this gives you a chance to win a trip to Tuscany, Bali, or any of these experiences that I've just talked about that will appear at the dinner. So if you can't come to the dinner, you can buy one of the raffle tickets, and you have your choice of any of these things. There's a few tickets left to the dinner, and there are still tickets left to the raffle. Today's Monday. You can't buy a ticket today, but you can call our office tomorrow at 9 a.m. and get a ticket to any of these things.
And would you like to give the phone number? Of course you would.
I would, yes. That's 503-368-3203.
And there's some information on the website, NehalemTrust.org, as well. Before we go, next generation, bringing in new folks that are as excited as the current members?
Karen's doing great work with that, with the garden.
You know, we do next generation from a couple different perspectives. One is adults, but they're the next generation of donors and members of the trust. And then the next generation, what we traditionally think of, is the children. We have regular children's programs at the Trust. Friday, we had two events going. We had 27 middle school kids come for a day of service, worked in the garden, learned about healthy soil and predatory insects and some things about our ducks and slugs. We also had another group of third graders that was down by the riverside where they learned about all sorts of environmental education elements.
So you get to play in the dirt and learn something at the same time.
Yes, yes, and I love working with the middle school kids. They're so impressionable, and the kids here are, they're just very thirsty for information, and they're really in tune with nature. So it's great to help along with that process.
Well, what the Community Trust does is inspiring. I know it inspired me when I first heard it on KMUN about 12 years ago, so... Mm-hmm. Let us continue it forth, as we're doing this morning. For those of you who are in the area just visiting, and of course, all of you who live in this beautiful part of the world, again, the 7th Annual Living Locally Gala is Saturday, June 7, at 6 p.m., and then there is the Community Garden Program, which is Tuesdays and also Saturday events as well. And for more information on that, NehalemTrust.org. And the phone number, once again, 503-368-3203. Karen Matthews and Lorraine Ortiz, thanks and congratulations and continued good work on all of this. It's wonderful, and the benefit sounds just yummy and fun as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about our program.
We appreciate it, Peter. Thank you.
And we will be back next month, another edition of Neocony View.